Okay, I'd like to spend this hour with you focusing really on one very small section of Parshas Lech Lecha, really mainly to focus on one particular pasuk, but we are going to end up looking at some of the surrounding pesukim as well in this part of Parshas Lech Lecha. I'm going to diverge at least partially from, I think, to some degree, the kind of shiur that I'm personally am used to giving. And we're going to be kind of crossing back and forth a little bit between the realms of pshat and drush here during the course of this shiur. However, one of the goals I have by the time we're done is to, at least in one particular and important respect, I think, to understand the what sometimes is the relevance of one for understanding the other. I'm going to start sharing the screen. The pasuk that I really want to focus on, I'm not sure that was the booklet shared with the source booklet shared with you, but no. All right, I'll put it on the screen. Let me see if I don't want to waste too much time on the chat, but if I can do it quickly, I will post it in the chat. All right, I think it's going to take me too long. So my apologies. I don't want to end up taking up too much of our time trying to do that. So I'll just have to be on the screen here. Some of you may have seen the title of the shiur if it was advertised. A very familiar notion in Jewish lore, the comparison of the Jewish people to the stars of the sky, which has its roots in this week's Parsha and Parshas Lech Lecha. And we're going to begin by thinking about that question in the title, Are We Really? But let's first take a look at that pasuk in context. In the middle of our parsha, we're going to look at some of the context soon, but I want to focus first on this pasuk, a rather well-known pasuk, Vayotzeo Sohachutza. Hashem took Avram outside, Vayomer, and he said to him, Habetna Hashamaimo Sforha Kochavim, look up to the sky, or look at the sky, and count the stars. Into Chalis Porosam, if you can, right? So obviously that was intended as it's not a question, but the equivalent of a rhetorical question, right? A rhetorical challenge, right? Count them if you can, right? Obviously the point being that you can't. Vayomer lo, and he said to him, Ko yihi azarecha, so will be your descendants, that your descendants, your children and grandchildren will be like the stars of the sky. And obviously the simple meaning of the pasuk is that they will be so numerous, like the stars of the sky, that you won't be able to count them because there will be so many of them. That's the promise that Hashem makes to Avraham Avinu here in this parasha, which is right before the Brisbane HaBesarim, one of the main covenants that Hashem makes with Avraham Avinu. Now, the question that I want to pose here is, are we really, right? Was this promise that was made to Avraham Avinu ever really fulfilled, right? Are the Jewish people so incredibly numerous? If you think about the Jewish people in the scheme of things in the world, we don't seem to be particularly, uncountably numerous, right? So what exactly does this mean? And this notion that this is a promise that doesn't seem to really have been fulfilled is actually rather straightforwardly said, both by some of our classic Mefarshim on Chumash, as well as the truth is by the Torah itself. So let's look ahead at the next page of the source booklet here to the beginning of Sefer Dvarim. The beginning of Sefer Dvarim, the very beginning, Moshe Rabbeinu says to the Jewish people, Hashem Elokeichem hirba eschem. Hashem has made you, has increased you very much. V'hinechem hayom k'chochvei hashamayim larov. Moshe says straight out to the Jewish people, look, there are so many of you, you're like the stars of the sky. So Moshe Rabbeinu states explicitly, guess what? The promise that Hashem made to Avraham Avinu has been fulfilled. Now, the next pasuk's a little strange, but maybe not you know, it's not so strange as to be not understandable that he then says, Hashem Elokei Avosechem, Yosef Aleichem Kachem Elef Pa'amim, Vivarech Eschem Kasher Diber Lachem. That he says to them, even though you're already Kechukhei Hashemayim Larov, may God increase you even more, 1,000 times more than you are now, right? And bless you as he has said to you. Okay, so he's kind of davening for an even further increase in the numbers of the Jewish people. But his initial statement is, look, you already are Kechukhei Hashemayim Larov, right? How many Jewish people are there at that point, right? The census of 600,000 men between the ages of 20 and 50, a couple of million people. So that's what's being described as Kechukhei Hashemayim Larov, just like was promised to Abraham. But what's fascinating is what happens in some of the Mefarshim on this Pasuk, which is that the Mefarshim challenge Moshe Rabbeinu's statement. Okay? And they say, let's take a look. They say, look at Rashi. Rashi says, what are you talking about? Is that really true? That at that time, the Jewish people were so numerous as like the stars of the sky? Vahalolo hayu elashishim ribo. Right. There were only 600,000 of them. Right? Obviously, even the ancients and the medievals were well aware that there were a lot more stars than that. Right. So if the promise was that the Jewish people were going to be like the stars of the sky, you know, so numerous, maybe so numerous as to be even uncountable. Well, not only is it possible to count the 600,000, right? That's exactly how we know there were 600,000 men, because they counted them, right? So that's not, into chalis porosam. That's not uncountable. That's not a big enough number to be like kechukhei hashamayim. So what does Rashi say instead? He says, what it means is, so mahu v'hinchem hayom. So what does it really mean? It means hinchem mishulim kayom. That Moshe is comparing the Jewish people to the day and to the stars, meaning what? Kayamim la'olam kachama v'chalavana v'chakochavim. That this is not intended as being about numbers, that there are as many of you as there are stars of the sky. It's rather more qualitative, right? It's referencing the virtual eternity of the sun, the moon, and the stars. Just like as long as the universe is around, there'll be a sun and a moon and a stars. As long as there's an earth around, so too the Jewish people are a permanent feature of the world. But that's the meaning of this pasuk. Now it goes without saying that is a midrashic interpretation of this pasuk. It's obviously not the pshat in this pasuk, for the very simple reason that the last word in the pasuk is larov. Right, it says hinchem hayom kechukhei hashamayim larov. You are like the stars of the sky with regard to your numbers. Right, how many of you there are? So you know the super commentaries on Rashi, you know, do some work trying to figure out what that word larov means. And let's stipulate for the moment that probably the straightforward, you know, pedestrian interpretation of all of this to solve this problem, which is, you know, how is it that what does it mean that the Jewish people are so like the stars of the sky? Obviously, they're not quite, is to simply say that it was never intended that way, right? That when Hashem promised Avram Avinu that your descendants will be, you know, uncountable like the stars of the sky, that was, you know, an exaggeration. It was a way of saying there are going to be so many descendants. And that's probably the simple pshat, right, of these psukim. But Rashi is nevertheless doing us a service by calling attention to the fact that there is a vast chasm between the number of Jews and the number of stars. However, there's a bigger problem with this notion of the promise to the Jews of being like the stars of the sky. It's not this pasuk which says that they were in fact so, just Rashi, you know, has a problem with it, but that there's another pasuk that says exactly the opposite. Just a few chapters, a few prakim after this pasuk, where Moshe says that you are kechukhei hashamayim larov, a few prakim later in Parshas Vaschanan and Sefer Dvarim, what does Moshe say to the Jewish people? Lo meirubchem mikol ha'amim chashak Hashem bachem vayivchar bachem. The reason that God chose you and desired you to be his people is not because there are so many of you. Lo meirubchem. Ki atem hama'at mikol ha'amim. You are the fewest of all of the nations. You're the smallest of all of the nations. There are fewer of you than there are of any other notable, you know, group of people on the planet. Rather, ki me'ahavas Hashem eschem, u'mishomro es hashvuah u'nishbah la'avoseichem, hotzi Hashem eschem b'yad chazakah v'yiftachem beis avdim b'yad paro. Rather, why did Hashem choose you? It was because of his love for you and for us, in keeping with the oath that he took to our ancestors, to Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, Tzar, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah, to do this for us, and that's why he took us out of Mitzrayim, and that's why we are his special people. It's because of that, not because of our numbers. Now, if all it had said was that the reason Hashem chose you was for these qualitative reasons, not because of your numbers, so that wouldn't be a problem. That wouldn't be denying that there are many of us. It was just saying that that's not the reason for Hashem's choosing us. But it doesn't just say that. He says, I'll prove to you that it's not because of your numbers, because you don't have great numbers. Ki atem hama'at mikol ha'amim. So how is it that, yesterday Moshe Rabbeinu was saying that hinchem hayom kechokvei hashamayim larov, right? And today he's saying that tem ha'ma'at mikol ha'amim, that there are, you are, the Jewish people is noticeably small, not dafka so big as to be uncountable. So what happened to this promise made to Avram Avinu? This point that the Jewish people are in fact small and not numerous Not only do some of the Mefarshim, you know, accept that point, they double down on it. If you look at the Rashbam here on this pasuk in Devarim Perek Zayin, the Rashbam says on this pasuk, Lo mi rubchem mikol hamim, that Hashem didn't choose you because of your how numerous you are. He says, Anshei levav yavinu v'yitmahu. People of kind of sound mind will understand and will be rather shocked and wondering about this pasuk. V'chi Moshe Rabbeinu hayasavur sheYisrael hayu toim b'zeh hadavar? Did Moshe Rabbeinu really think that the Jewish people were mistaken about this? Sheyu merubim mikol ha'umos shebaolam? Shehutzrach lomar lo merubchem? Why was this notion that the Jewish people were not chosen because of their numbers an idea that the Jewish people needed to be disabused of? Right? Why did Moshe Rabbeinu think that the Jewish people thought that they were chosen because there were so many of them? How ridiculous! Everybody knows that the Jewish people are a very small nation, right? Not only are they, and not only does the Torah say so, says the Rashbam, but it's completely obvious. And so we have to come up with some explanation of why Moshe even bothered saying this, okay? And you similarly see in the Kliyakar on the same page, Lashon zet sarich beur, this requires some explanation. Where would anybody ever get the idea that it was because of our the magnitude of our numbers, because in fact, you know, we are few. Okay, so these psukim, these mefarshim, and simply the facts of the human population call our attention to the fact that the promise to Avram Avinu that the Jewish people will be like kochvei hashamayim larov is mysterious to some degree, right? The Jewish people are not a particularly big people, and if Hashem was promising Abraham, a nation to come to come out of his descendants, right? Ve'eschol goy gadol, as it says at the very beginning of this week's parasha, will make you into a great nation. What happened to the promise that we would be so big, so many? And it makes us wonder, what was that promise really all about? Now, here once again, let me call attention to the fact that if one wants to read this in a, you know, straightforward, simple pshat, somewhat pedestrian fashion, one cannot deny that there is a relatively reasonable, simple way to resolve this whole problem, which is to say that the promise to Avram Avinu that you will have so many descendants wasn't necessarily being communicated to Avraham in comparison to other nations, right? When Hashem said you're going to have so many, so many descendants, what was the context? Was the context that your descendants are going to be so many relative to other nations? One could argue not. Rather, what was the point? That you're going to have so many descendants relative to what?
To your current situation.
Exactly. Relative to zero, right? Avram and Sarah had no children. And Avraham was worried about having a future at all, right? And so the one could understand that the point of this, even if you accept what we said before, that it's an exaggeration of some sort trying to make a point. Well, the point is you're so worried that you have no children. Not only are you going to have a child, you're going to have many, 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 many descendants that you wouldn't be able to count, right? Meaning you're going to have a big family, right? Not necessarily in comparison to other nations. Now, again, there was already an earlier promise, Ve'eschol l'goy gadol, I will make you into a great nation. So, you know, one might wonder, you know, about that, but it's at least a reasonable interpretation on the simple pshat level of these psukim. That being said, as I said in my introductory remarks, I do want to spend a little bit of time exploring some more midrashic interpretations, not actually from the midrashim themselves from that long ago, but in the style of a more midrashic interpretation of this promise that was made to Avram Avin. For the next little part of this shiur. Now, we already encountered such an interpretation, not of the original promise to Avram Avinu, but of the pasuk at the beginning of Devarim, where Moshe says to the Jewish people that you are in fact kichokvei hashamayim larov, right? That you have reached that stage, and Rashi had said that's not really true, and so Rashi insisted that he gave a different kind of interpretation and said that it didn't mean that you're as many as the stars. It meant that you are like the stars in a different way in terms of your permanence, right, in the future of humanity. Well, what about the original promise where Hashem said to Avram, you know, he took him outside and he said, look at the sky. Can you count the stars? Ko yihyeh zarecha. So too will be your children. So there is an interpretation of that pasuk that is cited in the name of the Baal Shem Tov. Now the Baal Shem Tov, who is quoted all the time, we don't really have Sfarim written by the Baal Shem Tov, right? His disciples collected so much of his material. So there is this Sefer that's called Sefer Baal Shem Tov, but it's a collection of excerpts from Sfarim written by disciples of the Baal Shem Tov and in the ensuing generations that were quoted from the Baal Shem Tov. I have to say that I came across this quoted in one book, and I managed to track down an earlier source for this in this book. And you see this book quotes this in the parentheses at the end of the paragraph from a sefer called Beis Yisrael. I tried mightily to track down that sefer and figure and find something, you know, some more original source, but I was unsuccessful. You could imagine how many Sfarim there are in the history of Jewish literature called Beis Yisrael. So it's a little hard to find out. But this is as far as I got. So it says here, Habetna Hashamayim, please look at this at the heavens and count the stars if you can. Ko yihyeh zarecha, so will be your descendants. B'shem HaBaal Shem Tov HaKadosh Zal, the name of the Baal Shem Tov, Shapirei, she explained this as follows. In what way was Hashem telling Avram that his descendants would be like the stars? Baal Shem Tov doesn't interpret this as being about their how many descendants he will have, but rather, D'chmosha ha-kochavim nir'im l'mata ketanim, u'lemala b'shamayim hem gedolim ma'od. Just like the stars, if you look at the stars from down here on Earth, you look up at the sky, so the stars look tiny, right? Each one is like the head of a pin. But if you go up into the heavens, right, where the stars actually are, there they look really big. They're huge. And of course, you know, we know that even better now than it was known in earlier centuries, quite how huge the stars are. Kain b'nei Yisrael, so too b'nei Yisrael. Nirim ketanim lamata ba'olam hazeh. They look small here in this world. Uva'olam ha'elyon hin gedolim lama'od. But in the world above, they, meaning we, are very, very big. In other words, what the Baal Shem Tov is saying is that the comparison that Hashem was promising Avram would be the case for his descendants was not about how many Jews there would be, how many descendants of Avram Avinu there would be, but rather making a statement about the significance of the Jewish people, and especially the significance of the Jewish people in Shemayim, meaning the significance to Hashem. And in a certain way, what that really means is, I can't be in the mind of the Baal Shem Tov, but it certainly is connected with the notion that not just kind of in God's eyes in Shemayim, but that in the scheme of things, looking from a cosmic perspective, the Jewish people are incredibly significant. And that's, of course, something which, in fact, if we ask, was the promise made to Avram Avinu actually fulfilled? Well, in that respect, boy, has it been fulfilled, right? That the Jewish people who are, in fact, when you look around in the world over the course of time, right? Are there Jewish people so big? Are there so many of us? Are we so important? So the answer is no. And in fact, unfortunately, for much of history, not only have we been small in number, we've been weak in power and somewhat diminished on the world stage. But at the very same time, over the course of the very same history, when looked at from a bird's eye perspective, or as the Baal Shem Tov is really calling it, a God's eye perspective from up in Shemayim, right? The Jewish people have, and Judaism have, of course, an outsized influence on the course of humanity and the human condition through the course of history. And this is very much in keeping with the Baal Shem Tov's, with part of the mission of early Hasidus, right? Which was to give to help the downtrodden simple Jew, feel proud and of being Jewish, and feel that he or she too is important and not just an afterthought in the scheme of the cosmos. And so to give some joy and self-esteem to the simple Jew. And that's a theme, of Hasidus, and very much is built into this very simple statement of the Baal Shem Tov. Okay. So that's an example of an interpretation of this pasuk that makes it about not about numbers, but about something else, about something qualitative. It doesn't say specifically here that this interpretation was motivated by seeing the number issue as a problem, there really aren't so many of us. Be that as it may, it is a way to interpret this pasuk. Okay. What now we need to do is turn our attention to a different problem in this passage in Parshas Lech Lecha that is our focus. That is the following problem. And again, it's going to be a problem that has a simple answer and then also has more complex and deeper answers. It says here in this pasuk, and I was rather flabbergasted when I first came across this question, because I first came across this question, I don't know, maybe 15 or 20 years ago, but I was certainly already an adult, and I was rather surprised that this problem had never occurred to me before. It says here in our pasuk that Vayotzei Oso Achutza, he took Avram outside, and he said, Habet na Shamayma, look to the heavens, and count the stars, if you can see them, right? But what happens a few psukim later? A few psukim later, during the course of the story of the Bris Bein HaBesarim, of this covenant Hashem makes with Avram, he says to him, take these animals and then cut them in half and that whole thing, right? And then it says, and Hashem, Avram did so. And then what does it say? Vayihi Hashemesh Lavo v'tardema nafla al Avram. What does Vayihi Hashemesh Lavo mean? That means the sun began to set. The sun began to set, and sleep descended upon Avram. Avram fell asleep. Okay. And after he fell asleep, Hashem speaks to Avram and makes him this grand promise of, you know, one day your descendants will be foreigners in a foreign land and they'll be slaves and then I'll take them out. The whole formation story of the Jewish people. And then a little bit later on, it says, Vayhi Hashemesh Ba'ah. And the sun, in fact, had set. It had finished setting. Well, this poses a rather difficult problem, right? This means that in Pasuk Yud Beis, it says, Vayhi Hashemesh Lavo, the sun started to set. Well, that means that before that, it was daytime. The sun hadn't set yet. So what does it mean that Hashem took Avram outside and he said, look up at the sky, at the stars, can you count the stars? It was the middle of the day. You can't see any stars. That's a pretty obvious problem, right? One which, like I said, I was rather surprised I had never encountered until not so long ago. That's a very basic problem with this. So what is going on here in this parsha? Okay, so let's look at a handful of solutions that are proposed to this problem. We're going to start with one that appears in of all places in a Tosfos on Maseches Brachos, not where you usually go to find solutions to problems of story in Chumash, but here on page six of the booklet, during the course of discussing a different issue, because of certain calculations that he's making about various the sequence of various things in the Torah and how long they took, Tosfos comes to the conclusion that Haisa Parshas Bein HaBesarim Kodem LaParshas Achar HaDvarim Shalosh Shanim, that the episode of the Bein HaBesarim, the covenant that Hashem made with Avram, happened 3 years prior to the section that he calls a section of Achar HaDvarim, that begins with the words Achar HaDvarim. Va'osa Parsha, and that Parsha, the one that starts with Achar HaDvarim, Misayemes, concludes with Vayachsheveha Lo Tzedaka, with that particular phrase. Okay, so let's go back to the Psukim and see what this means. Tosfos is saying is that, yeah, when you look at this whole parsha, the paragraph starts here, Achar HaDvarim Ha'ela, after the preceding story, Hayadvar Hashem, Hashem spoke to Avram, right? And he told him all these things. And there's this kind of back and forth conversation. And what he says is that you shouldn't look all the way to the end of this paragraph and think that it's all one story. It's not. That the episode that began and the conversation that began at the beginning of this parsha ends with these words that I'm pointing to here, Vayachsheveh Lo Tzedaka, at the end of Pasuk Zion. That's the end of that story. And what ensues after this is a different story. This conversation didn't all happen at once. And not only is what starts here in Pasuk Zion and the story of the Bris Ben HaBesarim, not only is it a separate conversation between Hashem and Avram, it actually happened to have happened before the first half of this paragraph. It happened 3 years earlier, right? But the Torah isn't always written in order. Okay, so for reasons that we're not discussing, Tosfos comes to this conclusion that this parsha is really divided in two, and the second half happened before the first half. And then Tosfos says, "Umizeh," and based on this, Miyashev Rashbam, the Rashbam resolves the following problem. Devimakom echad mashma shehaya laila, because at one part of the story, it sounds like it was happening at night. Dechsivus for hakochavim, because he said to Avram, count the stars, must be happening at night. But ubaser hachi, but after that ksiv, it says, the Torah writes, vahi hashemesh lavo, that the sun had set. Mashma shehu yom, that implies that until now, it's been the daytime. Okay, so exactly this problem that I was pointing out in the psukim was noticed, not surprisingly, by the Rashbam. And he said, you know what the answer to that problem is? Elevada ishma mina deshnei parshiyosheim. Actually, this is not one continuous story. It's two separate stories. V'lav bevasachas nemru. They didn't happen at the same time. Vein muktum amuchar batorah. And the Torah isn't always written in order. So what that does is it splits the part of the parsha that talks about the sun starting to set, and says that that was a completely different story that happened years before, and which means that there's not, we can say that the that when Hashem brought Avram outside, it was the nighttime, because the when it says later that the sun was starting to set, that was a completely different episode. It wasn't connected. Okay, so
Kvod Rav, maybe Vayotze Oto Hachutza, it's not Avraham, maybe it's the Shemesh.
But I'd say, but why would Hashem be talking to the sun? I mean, you know, he says,
he took it out of everything. He took out from the normal process of the Teva, and he wanted to show it during the day.
Interesting. Okay. So listen, since we're in a world of Midrashic interpretation, that's an eminently possible interpretation, right? That that the Vayotze you're interpreting as meaning a kind of taking the world out of its normal course of events. Okay. If some meaning can be built out of that, that could be very interesting. Okay. What other ways do we have to resolve this problem? So as I told you before, there is one very simple pshuto shel mikra resolution to this problem, which is the interpretation given by both Rabbi Yosef Bechor Shor in this next page, as well as in the Ibn Ezra gives a different pshat, which is that we have to look at the very first pasuk of the parsha. What's the very, and I'm sorry that I keep scrolling back and forth, but we need to keep looking at the psukim. Hope it doesn't make you dizzy when I do that. How did this parsha start? Ahar dvarim ha'ele, hayo dvar Hashem al Avram. Hashem spoke to Avram. Ba machazeh, Lamor. He said to him, in a machazeh. What's a machazeh? A machazeh is a vision, right? Which means that this whole conversation between Hashem and Avram isn't necessarily something that's happening in kind of the normal waking life of Avram Avinu, but he had a vision, a nevuah, in a vision. And so, therefore, if it's all happening in a vision and not in reality, then when it says Vayotzeo Soha Chutza, when he says he took him outside and he said, look at the heavens, maybe this was happening during the day, but that doesn't mean that in his dream it was daytime. If it was all in a vision, so maybe in the vision it was nighttime, right? And at a certain point later in the story, Avram actually, it's no longer happening in a vision, and the Bris Bein HaBesarim, many will argue, was happening, so to quote unquote, in real life. Okay, so that solution to this problem, as I mentioned, is said here by Rabbi Yosef Bechor Shor. He says, "Bamachazeh kemo bachalom," like in a dream. And he, you know, it's a little bit cryptic. If you haven't done the background work that we've done to recognize the problem in the parsha, it would be a little hard to understand what he's saying here. But now that we've done that, it's very straightforward. In a dream, ki adayin hayayom. In other words, what is it? Because it was still the daytime. What Rabbi Bechor Shor is saying is that it has to be a dream because it was still the daytime. How do we know it was the daytime? Because it says vayhi hashemesh lavo. It says that the sun was starting to set later, and then he says later vayotzeo so achutza vehera lo akochavim bayom, and he showed him the stars during the day, but that had to be in a dream because he was showing him the stars during the day. Okay, and as I mentioned, Ibn Ezra, if you look it up, has the same pshat. Okay, and so that's a pshuto shel mikra solution to this problem, that when Hashem said to Avram, try to count the stars, he was showing him a nighttime sky during the day in a vision. Okay. What I'd like to spend the next few minutes on is a very arresting and very meaningful alternate interpretation and solution of this problem, of the daytime versus nighttime, and something which gives an entirely different spin to the meaning of this promise made to Avram Avinu, and again in a midrashic vein. This was a sefer that I never saw before. I saw it quoted somewhere else, and it was very taken with this pshat, so I tracked it down to look it up. It's a perush called Minchas Shabbos on Pirkei Avos, written by a figure from the 1800s. His name was Rav Yosef Chaim. He was the Yosef Chaim Kara. He was the Rav of several towns in central Poland, which are listed here. And he wrote a perush on Pirkei Avos. And The particular mission in Pirkei Avos that he's talking about is not important for us, and I apologize for the difficult to read print here. There is no, you know, more recent edition of this sefer. And he says the following: Venerally, it seems to me, dihine lichora yikshe al ma'amar hakadosh baruch hu she'amar habetna shemayim usfor hakochavim. It would seem that there's something difficult about Hashem saying to Abraham, look up to the heavens and count the stars. Ki ilu hakochavim she'anu roim heim nimnoi hamispor mei rebuyam, as if the stars that we see are not countable. Right? Hashem is sort of implying you can't count them. But that's not true. For millennia, astronomers, people who look at the heavens, have been counting the stars, right? So the scientists of his time told him that there were not more than 22,000 visible stars, okay? Vim efshar lomar shall pi divrehem shadarshuzal sheikbio hakadosh baruch hu lamala mekipas harakia. There is a medrash that says that Hashem took Avraham and brought him up to the heavens, and he was actually looking down on the stars rather than up. Okay, not really important for us right now. Then it makes sense, because maybe from there are, you know, who knows how many stars you can see. Okay, so that's his, but the fipshuto kasha, right? Is it really true that the stars are uncountable? So obviously his 22,000 number is pretty way off from what we know today, right? But his first problem is that, is it really true that the stars are uncountable? Now, but ultimately, okay, he's going to address our problem too. So in the context of this question, he starts to develop an idea about how to interpret these psukim, and he says this. Le'ish holeich be'ishon laila, a person who walks outside in the dark of night, she'yabit hashamayim, looks up to the heavens, imrabu hakochavim hame'irim la'aretz kedei she'yair al kalpanim, Miktsas nesivaso, right? So what does he see? He sees a lot of stars, and they provide light that reaches the earth, and they provide, you know, enough light to at least partially light up his path, give him some, be able to see a little bit, to see where you're walking. Avol mi yashgiach bayom kitzeis hashemesh begvuraso al mispara kochavim rabim heim ve'imlo. Says, if you look up at the sky during the day, when the sun is shining, he says, how many stars can you see? None, right? You can't see whether there are a lot of stars or very few. You can't see how many there are at all, right? And so, v'zo shehotzi HaKadosh Baruch Hu es Avram Avinu olav hashalom be'etzem hayom, says, that's why Hashem took Avram outside during the day. See, we view that as a problem, right? If the whole point was to show Avram the heavens and say, try to count the stars, obviously there are so many you can't count them. So how could he have been taken out during the day? You can't see any of them during the day. So what he is saying here is Adarab, on the contrary. Hashem took Avram, it was during the day. And what did he say to Avram? He said, look up at the heavens. Can you count the stars if you can? And he couldn't. Why couldn't he? Not because there were too many to count, but because the sun was shining. That's why he couldn't count the stars. Vayhi Hashemesh Lavo, later it says that the sun started to set, right? So obviously it was daytime before. Va'amar habetna shamayim mosfora kochavim, he said, look up at the heavens and count the stars. Af sheheim omdim bayom kamo balayla. Are the stars there during the day? Of course they're there, right? The stars are just as much there during the day as they are at night. Mikol makom lo yushkaf bayom al misparam, but they can't be seen during the day in all their great numbers, mipa'as or hashemesh, because of the tremendous amount of light provided by the sun. Vayomer lo, and he said to Avram Avinu, ko yiyye zarecha, so will be your descendants. What does that mean? What was the promise to Avram? Ki mi pa'as or hashemesh ha'elokei asher yushpa lehem be'emtzaus ha'Torah lo yushkaf od al ribui kamosam. What was the promise made to Avram Avinu? The promise Hashem was making to Avram Avinu was that What are your descendants going to be like? They're going to be like the sun. That the Jewish people are going to shine so brightly that when anybody tries to look at the stars, right? Nobody, when the Jewish people are around, they're not going to be able to count the stars because of the great bright light that is being shined by the Jewish people as a result of the Torah that we were given and and the mission that Hashem gave us and the amount that we are therefore able to contribute to the world. And so that the bracha Avraham Avinu, and of course there's a certain sense in which this interpretation is even more meaningful now that we know, I mean, I guess it was known already at his time, although I don't know if he had enough of a secular education to understand this, the author of this perush, but which is that the sun is also a star, right? What's the point? The point is that the Hashem was giving Avraham a promise that when taking a look at humanity and at the world, the Jewish people, which is just one little star among many, that is going to shine so very brightly as to sometimes be sort of drown out everything else you can see. And the inability to count the stars was not because there were so many. It was because of the brightness of the sun. That was the promise made to Avraham Avinu, and which dovetails with, in a certain sense, even though the details are a little different, with what the Baal Shem Tov said that we quoted earlier, that this is about the a qualitative promise rather than a quantitative promise. And therein, of course, there is a great sense in which this promise, in fact, was fulfilled, even though the Jewish people are hama'at mikol ha'amim, right? We are the least numerous among the nations. There aren't so many of us, but adarabah, that on the contrary, despite our small numbers, we have been able, not because of our own personal zechus, but because of the zechus of our of people like Avraham Avinu, and because of the gift given to us by the Ribono Shel Olam, to be able to offer so much to the world and to shine brightly. Okay. Now, what I'd like to do is to do next is, and with this head towards the home stretch of this shiur, of this hour that we're spending together, is to, in a certain sense, bring the, I see the there's a question in the comments about it. So about the word larov. Does it say that wasn't in this pasuk, right? That was just in the pasuk in Sefer Dvarim, the word larov. Am I mistaken? Right. It doesn't say that here. Here it just says svora kochavim and tuchal lispor osam. The pasuk in Sefer Dvarim is separate. I mean, that's that's the nature of drash rather than pshat, is that we're offering a meaningful interpretation of this pasuk that doesn't necessarily have to account for, everything and every other pasuk at the same time. What I'd like to do here now is to bring this in a certain sense back to the realm of pshat in a certain sense. But to learn something from this more elaborate and perhaps deeper and midrashic interpretations of this pasuk to inform maybe a deeper understanding of the simple pshat in these psukim and in this promise. So let's turn back to the beginning. So what's the simple meaning? The simple meaning of the psukim is that, of course, this was about numbers and that Hashem was promising Avraham Avinu that he would have, many descendants. Maybe he wasn't promising him that we would be more than any other nation, but that there would be a lot of them and very many of them. And the millions of descendants, qualifies as a lot. Okay. And that's good enough to as a simple interpretation of these psukim and for the fulfillment of that promise. But there's something much deeper to understand about that promise and the fulfillment of it. Avraham Avinu was a man who lived, about 3,000 years ago. Hashem appeared to him and told him that you're going to have so many descendants. Let's take a moment. This is something some of you may have thought about or read about before. But there's something that we should understand about the nature of populations from the science of demographics. And if you're interested, I'm going to ask the Torah in Motion to provide this PDF to everybody later, so you can read through this in more detail if you want. But I have included at the end of this booklet an article that was published in Nature about 15 years ago about the following issue: modeling the recent common ancestry of all living humans. Okay. I'm not sure if we're going to have time to do this in any detail, so let me give a little bit of an introduction here without reading the text of this. You know, if you think about your ancestry, right? So each generation, how many ancestors do you have? Right? So each person has two parents and four grandparents and eight great-grandparents, right? And every generation that you go back, right, you multiply by two, right? The number of spots on your family tree, right? In math, it's, two to the N, right? However many generations back you're going, it's two to the power of that number. And very, very quickly, right, even over the course of not that many generations, you get numbers that are astronomical numbers, right? I should give a quick example. Okay, so I just did a quick calculation here on a calculator. So if you go back 24 generations, that's more than 16 million ancestors on your family tree. Okay. Now, obviously, those aren't 16 plus million different people, right? Because at a certain point, they start overlapping, right? So if you follow the family tree in one branch of the tree, right, it's going to end up coming back to a person who also appears in a different part of your family tree, right? So, there aren't, it's not necessarily that many people. But, 24 generations, is several centuries, right? But you start going back thousands of years, right? There comes a point, scientifically, where there's at least somebody of that generation from thousands of years ago who, believe it or not, is statistically an ancestor of every single human being alive today. So that every single human being alive in 2022, when they trace back at one point on the branch of their ancestry, will hit that person. Now, obviously, this gets shifted, and that's what this article is really about. This article in Nature is the impact of, populations are geographically separated and don't necessarily mix, that very much. And so for all sorts of reasons. And so, it's not like the whole world is all one big group, right? But there is some cross-pollination of different groups. And that's what's called in the scientific literature, I'll put this on the screen now, what he calls the MRCA, the most recent common ancestor, right? And it's a very interesting scientific question. How far back do you have to go until you reach the point where there is basically, you will find somebody back then who for whom everybody today is a descendant of that person. And the conclusion of this article, even accounting for separations of populations and all sorts of reasons of subpopulations, is this very surprising result that the MRCA of all present day humans lived just a few thousand years ago, in these models. Okay. And the, again, we don't have necessarily time to go through all of this. Here, let's try to read this this article, this paragraph. I'm not going to read all of it. As genealogical ancestry is traced back beyond the MRCA, let's say you go back to a certain point where there's somebody who's the ancestor of everybody today. You keep going back even further, a growing percentage of people in earlier generations are revealed to be common ancestors of the present day population, right? So let's just pick a number out of a hat. If you go back 8,000 years, says you go back 5,000 years, there's somebody who's an ancestor of everybody today. Well, a little bit before that, you'll probably find two people who were the ancestors of everybody today. And you go back a little bit before that, you'll find a growing number of people who are ancestors of everybody today. And eventually you reach a point. I'll stop here again. You can read the article a later date if you want to read more. Eventually, by going back further, you reach a point where, I hope you're following this, where everybody alive then is an ancestor of everybody alive today. Right? And whatever, you know, however many people were alive at a certain time, a very, very long time ago, so that everybody in that population either has no descendants today, or because their line ended, or is a descendant of everybody alive today. So that's a very interesting point of science. And at the end of the article, they, you know, get a little, I guess you might call it a little midrashic on us and say that our findings suggest a remarkable proposition. No matter the languages we speak or the color of our skin, we share ancestors who planted rice on the banks of the Yangtze, who first domesticated horses on the steppes of the Ukraine, who hunted giant sloths in the forest of North and South America, and who labored to build the Great Pyramid of Khufu. Okay, so, you know, all of us are descendants from everybody at some certain point in history. Now, putting aside the specifics, the narrow numbers and the absoluteness, you know, it was everybody at that time or it was right. But let's bring this back to this, to our learning our Pasuk and Chumash. Hashem said, promises to Avram Avinu that, you know, Koyi Yezaracha, you're going to have millions of descendants, right? Tons of descendants. And we said, you know what, that came true. But we now, when we understand something about the demographics, right? Okay, that's true. But you know what? That was true of a lot of people around at the time of Avram Avinu, right? Almost a huge percentage of the individuals who lived at the time of Avram Avinu, you know, had just as many descendants as Avram Avinu. In fact, all of us are there. All of us Jews who are descendants of Avram Avinu. We're also all descendants of somebody else who lived at the time of Avram Avinu. Right? So what's so special that we're descendants of Avram Avinu? And what was so special about the promise made to Avram Avinu? What is this? What's so special about this connection that we have with Avram Avinu and that we're his descendants?
That we can trace ourselves back.
What we're trying to explain again is we've talked about midrashic interpretations. We're coming back to the pshat, right? Which is that this really is about numbers. But now I'm asking you, fine, it's the pshat, but why is it meaningful? So what's the obvious answer? The obvious answer is that we know that we're the descendants of Avram Avinu, right? But there might be 5 million other people who were walking planet Earth at the time of Avram Avinu who are also my bubby and my Zadie, right? But I don't know that. They're complete strangers to me, right? The promise to Avram, and here's where the pshat and the drash merge, right? Because why is it the promise to Avram was about numbers, but why do the numbers matter, right? Why is that something special? The reason that is something special is because of the kinds of things that we were taught by thinking in a different way about these psukim, but what we learned from the Baal Shem Tov, but what we learned from the Minchas Shabbos about the meaning of the promise to Avram Avinu, that the promise to Avram Avinu wasn't just about how many Jews there would be. It was about how special the Jewish people would be. And not only, and that the, it, it's, why are we, why do, as I said before, the light that we've been Baruch Hashem able to shine on the world over the course of the of history, it's not something that's because you know of my and your great talents. No offense to anybody here, right? But it's because of what we were given, and it's because of the zechus of Avram Avinu, and that was the promise that Hashem was making to Avram Avinu. Look up to the heavens and try to count the stars. Can you count them? And the answer is twofold. No, I can't count them. Why? Because there are too many and I'm going to have so many descendants. But why does that matter? That matters because there's another reason I can't count them. It's because you're showing me, trying to show me the stars during the day. And when the sun is shining, I can't see the stars. And that's a reflection of the meaningfulness of the Jewish people. And that Hashem was promising Avraham Avinu, you know, 3,000 years from now, there are people who are going to be saying Avraham Avinu was my Zaidi, and that I care about that, and that means something to me, and that it's contributed something to the world. That's the composite promise that was made to Avraham Avinu, and the composite fulfillment of that promise that has in fact come true over the course of the generation since Parshas Lech Lecha. Okay, thank you for joining me here tonight. That's the what I wanted to say today. We have 2 minutes left on our official clock, so if anybody would like to ask if you have any comments or questions, I'm happy to listen.
I think make it even stronger is the fact that it's not only that. We are, the whole world has got one ancestor, you know, millions of years ago. It's the fact that not only is that we recognize Avraham as our forefather, whereas the rest of the world doesn't recognize. And therefore, it makes it that much stronger, the promise to Avraham that his descendants would recognize him, remember him, know him, and follow him.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
I read something, Rabbi, that concerned me. It said, was Avraham a Jew, or were we Jews only when we got the Torah?
Okay, so that's I was for convenience's sake, I was using the word Jew when I was talking about the descendants of Avraham Avinu, right? That's really more of a that's both a substantive question and a semantic question, right? It's a substantive question, yeah, in the sense of, well, Avraham Avinu also had descendants who were not part of what we call the Jewish people, the descendants of Yishmael and the descendants of Esav, right?
Yes.
So the descendants of Keturah, right? So you're right, right? There's a sense in which the promised Avraham was Ki b'Yitzchak Yikarei l'chazara, right? That it was a segment of Avraham's descendants, right? That were given this promise. So there is some substance to that notion. It's also a semantic question, just of what does the word Jew mean, and how do we use the word Jew, which, you know, has its origins in the word Judah and Judea, and, you know, so that doesn't necessarily matter all that much, you know, what word we're using. But there are. You know, there is, as I said, something substantive here as well. Yes.
Thank you, Rabbi. Very good.
Like I said, I'm sorry that I couldn't share this PDF with you on my own, but I will, Mitzvah Hashem, I will ask the Torah in Motion office to provide it to everyone. Yeah.
I want to just point out, they've just recently found the painting by Mondrian, which was hung in the galleries upside down. It needed to be turned the other way up. I think that the best interpretation of this, of the machazeh that you're talking about, is the same thing he's saying. We've been looking at it upside down. If you look at
Right, so that's in keeping with the midrash that I mentioned very briefly and quickly at a certain point in the shiar, that says that, you see, if everybody is obviously free to leave at this point, it's after 9:30, but I'll spend another minute. There is a discussion in the midrash of, they talk about this word habet, habetna hashamayma. And the midrash says that the word habet usually means look down rather than look up. And as a result, that's what leads to the Medrash saying that Hashem took Avram up into the Shemayim and told him to look down at the stars, and that's what was going on here, right? So that's in keeping with what you were just saying, right? That he was telling him that you have to look at this whole thing from a different angle, from a different perspective.
Where is this Midrash?
I think it's in the Medrash Rabbah on that pasuk, but I think it might even be quoted by Rashi. Hold on a second. Let me check for you.
I think it's also related to the word chutz.
Could be.
That chutz is outside of the usual.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Let's see here if I could find you the source.
Don't worry, I'll send you my poem, which I've written on
yes,
this.
It's in Brachos Rabbah. It's in Brachos Rabbah, Mem Dalid Yud Bet.
Oh, 2412.
Yes, in Brachos Rabbah. Yeah, Ein Habata Elam Ilamala Lamata. All right, so you can look at there, you know.
That's exactly the same as the Mondrian, isn't it?
Right, that's what I was responding to.
Thank you very much.
I'm at, yeah, I believe that's where it is. If I'm off by a little bit, I apologize, but I believe that's where it is. Trying to do this quickly.
It was a fantastic Dvar Torah, if I may
Thank
say
you, that. I appreciate that. Okay, have a good Shabbos, everyone.
Good Shabbos.
Until
thank
the next
you.
Time.
Shabbat shalom, yeshkayach. Thank you.
Thanks so much. Terrific class. Thank you.
Thank you.
Shabbat shalom.
Shabbat shalom.